trip south. I'll just remind you once again, you're listening to KUCI in Irvine, and hit a little theme music. Darkling Eclectica presents a collection of broadcast fiction brought to you by the Darkling Eclectica. Rat's Reputation by Michael H. Payne, Part 14. Those of you who regularly employ the phrase slicker than a rat on wheels have no idea what you're talking about. Trust me on this. DeRay's Al Trent's only comment in the Kyotl Transport Company's 1734 logbook. It surprised Rat how quickly he got back into the swing of caravan life, the rhythm of the wagons, the stops in the market squares of little towns along the way, the music and stories around the campfires at night. He felt more at home here than he had since he'd left Ottersgate. Of course, as the smallest member of the outfit, he ended up doing the close-quarter work again, repairing ropes, sewing up sacks, crawling underneath to oil the axles. It was all stuff he'd done before, and the foxes were such congenial company, Rat found himself smiling most of the time, jokes, both practical and otherwise, flying from one end of the caravan to the other, morning, noon, and night. And the acrobatics! Rat had marveled at the vulpine street performers back in Ngaishan and Lai Tuan, but here, the foxes all tried to outdo each other in flips and twirls and airborne pirouettes, jumping from wagon to wagon while the caravan was in motion. They would sometimes give shows in the towns along the way, but they seemed to save their best stuff for those nights when they were camped in the middle of the jungle, the foxes dancing along ropes above the wagons, juggling porcelain vases from their cargo, tumbling and spinning and leaping about for the sheer fun of it, apparently. These performances got more intricate as the caravan wound its way north, more frenetic and more fantastic, till one midwinter night, Rat actually fell asleep, too exhausted from watching to stay awake.
"It's incredible," he told Al Trent the next morning. "You guys should sell tickets to that."
The Fennec nodded. "Well, if his nibs didn't mind, we would, but, well, last night was religious, wasn't it?"
"What?"
Rat felt a chill in the sunlight.
"His lordship!"
Al Trent crooked a thumb at the sky.
"Middle of both summers, northern and southern, he expects us foxes to do a bit of extra cavorting. But selling tickets, well, only caravan I know did that. Whole company woke up next morning bald as eggs. Some say none of them ever grew so much as a tuft of fur again, and I believe it."
He barked a laugh.
"A right bastard his nibs can be sometimes, no question."
"Tell me about it,"
Rat mumbled.
"Oh?"
Al Trent's ears perked forward.
"Felt the gentle touch of his lordship punting you up the backside, have you?"
Rat looked away, the rhythm of the hauler's chants twining around his thoughts, loosening his tongue, making it come out.
"He told me I had a home, a family, a place where I belonged. So I went there, and nobody knew who I was."
A moment, then...
Told you that in so many words, did he?" "No, of course not!"
Rat turned back, anger sparking at his whiskers.
"It was a trick! That's what he does!"
"Exactly."
The Fennec flicked his sand-colored tail.
"Anyone else, you don't know if they're tricking you. But his nibs, he tells you right out front, even shows you how he's going to do it most of the time. Thoughtful, I call it."
It's not right,
Rat got out through clenched teeth.
Well, it's not right me getting folks drunk and signing their names to work contracts either.
What?
But my point is, life is going to punch you in the snout. Looking to blame someone for it will only make you slower punching back.
He reached into a sack, pulled out a cricket, and bit its head off.
It's no use blaming his nibs because you didn't find your family. He doesn't care, and there's nothing you can do about it. But except, perhaps, make a family of your own. That's said to be somewhat enjoyable.
All Rat wanted to do then was jump off the wagon and let the jungle swallow him up. Run away the way he'd been... But he wasn't running away. He was running forward. His life in Ottersgate, that was the past. He was heading into...
Into what? Permanent rootlessness? Was that what he wanted? Was that really the life he pictured for himself?
Tayo.
A prod at his shoulder. Rat started back, saw Al Trent grinning at him.
Rest stop coming up. Get the trail mix ready for the haulers, will you?
Right.
Shaking his head, Rat jumped up and back into the wagon. Something to do other than think, at least. And he managed to keep his thoughts at bay, the days growing longer, the road winding further north, the snow on the peaks to the west shrinking.
Spring, then,
Al Trent announced.
Passes should be clearing. Time to head inland before we meet any bears.
Which meant everyone hauling, while Rat scouted ahead along the switchbacks. They had to stop a few times to clear old snow or new rock slides, but 2 weeks after leaving the Gulf Coast, they'd topped the pass and were starting down into the jungles on the other side. A month, moving on dirt paths from village to village, the panthers and leopards making Rat feel smaller than ever, and they reached the Coati Road, a wide strip of blacktop snapped through the jungle from north to south. North, then, the wagons pulling off at trading posts and villages, the jungle drying, thinning, becoming savanna, pampas grass appearing among the trees as the sun climbed to full summer. They stopped at a few little savanna towns the first week, but the foxes seemed more on edge, the campfires quiet each night, the air itself drier and dustier the further north they went, until the trees gave out completely to the swaying grass, and Al Trent gave the order,
"Double time, then."
The flattened ears of the foxes, eyes wide, fur quivering on their necks. When Rat finally asked Al Trent what was wrong, the fox muttered,
"Well, they say shadow in the grass takes the souls of the dead to the Shroud Islands far to the south, but well, the savannah's her old stomping ground, and I'd rather not chance meeting her, all things being equal."
Rat blinked. Did he mean the rattler? Or the cold fire, the strangler, the blood jaguar? She was just like the rest when it came to multiple names. The place was eerie enough to be death's abode, the sun boiling the blue from the sky, the grass rustling like voices on both sides of the road. Even at double speed, it took 2 days to cross the place, but at last the pampas began to give way, sandy soil here and there, spreading, taking over, the wagons emerging into the desert. Cheering, the haulers let their chant fly, the ramparts of the Daihari Mountains growing from nubs to spikes to full-fledged peaks over the next few hours, the walls and towers of Kazirazif nestled against the foothills. Meerkats with capes, hats, and spears stopped them at the city's south gate, checked their paperwork, and guided the wagons through the narrow streets to the marketplace in the square outside the caliph's palace.
"Right then," Al Trent yelled. "Tayo, the ropes!"
Rat leaped down, started undoing the knots the same way he'd been doing since last winter, but a creak, cords twanging, snapping, the whole side wall of the wagon suddenly hinging down toward him. He sprang back, rolled, heard shouts and thuds, the sun blocked out, one of the big pallets of mahogany sliding down toward him so fast, it hit him spinning away, pain firing through his leg.
"A nice, clean break, at least,"
the roadrunner doctor said after Al Trent and some of the others had carried Rat across the square to her office. Her wings gave his leg a sudden pull, and Rat gasped.
"Oh, slips right back into place."
She began stropping a straight razor.
"Shave off the fur, put a cast around it. In 6 weeks, you'll be good as new."
Al Trent shook his head, gave some script to the doctor, and some to Rat.
"Nice traveling with you, Tayo."
And a few days later, Rat lay on the lumpy mattress in his rented room off the square and watched the wagons pull out. The first month was easy. The pills the doctor had given him knocked him right out whenever his thoughts started going where he didn't want them. But when the pills were gone, he tried watching the folks bustling around the square, meerkat families in colorful cloaks, rats rushing by carrying packages, bobcats with white headpieces, all with places to go, with lives, names, roots, while he...
God damn it!
He pushed himself up, hobbled to the door. By now he'd gotten pretty good at stumbling down the Darb Mojambwe, one of the main streets that ran off the square, to a bar he'd found with an outside patio. It was nice, the winds off the desert waving spicy scents through the awning, the Daihari Mountains rising purple and gray over the roofs of Kazirazif. But beer didn't sound right today. He wanted something light and sweet and...
Iced tea,
he ordered. And the first sip took him back to summers at Nibbler House, he and Kylie and Cam and the others running around the gardens until that magical clinking of ice from the kitchen, Aunt Tyra pushing open the screen door, that big pitcher of tea on her silver tray, and that play they'd put on that one summer, must have been second grade, something Kylie had written about the coyote kingdoms deeper in the deserts to the southeast. He sighed. If she could see him now, see that look in his eyes, the one that had him avoiding the mirror every morning, the look he'd first seen in the face of that ragged bobcat he'd given his stump to back along the river. I look like I got a home, the cat had answered when Rat asked. Another hot gust rattled his whiskers. Shaking his head, he swigged the rest of the tea. Something a little stronger might not be a bad idea. He stood, clopped into the bar, and stopped, the dark inside thick with fear, the silence strained, tension prickling his fur like before a thunderstorm. Then voices, the first soft and slippery, a hiss to it.
I ask again that you not touch me.
Yeah?
The second voice, squeaky and slurred.
What are you gonna do about it, snake?
Eyes adjusting, Rat saw a chinchilla with a knife in front of the bar. Coiled at the end of the bar lay a large cobra, lapping at a bowl.
What I will do, the cobra said, is ask this third and final time.
The chinchilla laughed.
Is that all?
He reached up with his knife and poked the cobra with it.
'Cause I thought you hoodheads were supposed to be all mean and...
Rat started to step forward, his whiskers telling him what was about to happen, but the cobra lashed out so fast, Rat had barely lifted his paw from the floor before the snake was winding himself back into his place at the bar. The stink of poisoned blood filled the air, and the chinchilla, two red spots now in his fur, toppled over with a gurgle.
Rodent?
Came the cobra's voice, and Rat looked from the dying chinchilla into the wet stones of the snake's eyes.
Speak you challenge also?
A quick bow and Rat stepped back, hissed out the one cobraic word he'd made sure to learn.
Apologies.
Nodding, the snake turned back to the bar.
Testify and say, barkeep, this one warned that one, correct?
The meerkat behind the bar shrugged. You take the body when you go, Mr. Kasht. I not care what else happens. The cobra bowed.
As always, barkeep, this one's glad to help clean up. Known that former mammal is to you?
Another shrug from the barkeep.
Some vagabond here drinking since yesterday.
The meerkat raised his voice.
You rat! You travel at all with this chinchilla?
Rat could only shake his head, the chinchilla's eyes wide, his jaw moving, his squeak barely reaching Rat's ear.
I'm sorry, Dolores. I didn't mean to.
A wave of twitches through his fur, and the voice rattled off. A shadow fell, and Rat looked up to see the cobra swaying there across the still chinchilla's body.
His life is burned in her cold fire. She rips his final breath away. Her claw digs deep, tears free his soul, and off she pads the blood jaguar.
His hood twitched.
a prayer I heard once long ago, and use those times that I have need."
He bent himself, gaped wide his mouth, and closed it on the lifeless form, which was already more than Rat needed to see. He jumped to the bar, slapped down his glass and a pawful of coins, limped out into the heat and light of the desert afternoon. The dusty scent of death, the look on that guy's face, so lost and so familiar, no name, no home, no hope. He didn't want that, didn't want to stagger from one nowhere to another till the Rattler found him alone and unknown in some cheap room or on some barroom floor. But what else could he do? He didn't have any place to go. He was a wanderer now. And standing there, gripping the patio rail till the splinters bit into his paws, he couldn't keep it from bursting out. The basic fact at the top of the list of things he didn't want to think about, he hated all this wandering, wanted roots, wanted a home, wanted a family, wanted Ottersgate more than anything else in this whole goddamned world. And he couldn't have it, couldn't stay there, didn't belong anywhere. If he'd proved anything this past 4 years, leaving place after place, getting out before they threw him out, afraid. Afraid? Of what? Nothing could be worse than dying like that chinchilla. And the only way he figured he could avoid that particular destiny was... He blinked, the desert wind rushing past to dry the wet fur around his eyes. Prying his paws from the rail, he stepped onto the street, started up the Darb Mojambwe. Maybe he could get that doctor to take his cast off a little early. The leg felt fine, and he didn't want this thing on if he was going to be traveling. And traveling he was definitely going to be. He was going back home, back to Ottersgate. Sure, he didn't have a place there, but he meant to make himself a place there, whether anybody else liked it or not. The Lord Kitfox pressed heavy as a summer flash flood against the back of Tayo's neck, the desert sand all grit and grinding into his face and fur.
"Don't ask me to stop," the trickster hissed, "since you know I won't. I can't. I'm not the one you're wrestling with, after all, am I?"
The voice got softer, the scorn in it growing.
"Or are you too much of a coward to admit the truth?"
Baring his teeth, Tayo twisted his spine, spun like an otter, smashed both front paws hard into the side of the trickster's head, knocked the Lord with a grunt off his back and into the sand.
"Truth!" he gasped. "That's less than a word to you!"
Eyes stinging, he swarmed onto his lordship, dug his claws into the golden gray fur.
"You're the Lord of Lies! They're your air and food!"
The Lord Kitfox grinned, blood on his lips.
"Sounds familiar, doesn't it?"
he asked, and for the briefest instant, Tayo stared at his own face, clenched between his paws, his own brown fur and dark eyes, his own sideways grin on his own pointed snout. Then the vision puffed away like sand in the desert breeze, and Tayo was kneeling alone in the midday sun. Bartolomeo Paracas. The sun setting behind him, Rat stepped out of the woods at the edge of the bluff. The tall spike of stone he'd been seeing over the trees all afternoon, now rising from the bank of the river at the bottom of the valley. The Lady Raven's Spire. He looked down its length to the river, rolling south past the base of the cliff, followed its flow with his eyes until it forked at an island, a huge oak tree growing up from the hill at its center. Lights nestled among the roots and along the slope, and in the forest on the banks of both channels around the island. Ottersgate, on the first day of autumn, Rat felt a wonderful shiver let himself drink in the sight.
"Well, well, well."
A voice from the trees, and Rat turned, smiled at the scent, a long piece of darkness slipping from between the trunks.
"What have we here?"
A few years older, a few tail lengths longer, but...
"Blaze!"
He launched himself, wrapped his arms around her neck, hugged her like he hadn't hugged anyone in...
"Oh, no, you don't!"
Her paws pushed him back, her whiskers bristling.
"First of all, I'm the Fisher of Ottersgate now, not Blaze anymore, remember? And second of all, where in the... light blue above have you been?"
He shrugged.
"I told you, I had to go find out 4 years, almost five, and not a word from you. If I had my way, I'd..."
She jumped them, caught him up in her front paws, squeezed him tight.
Gods, it's good to see you. Hey!
He squirmed free, dropped to the ground, made a show of dusting himself off.
If I recall, etiquette says it's impolite to use your size advantage to push you over the cliff.
She touched her claws lightly to his chest.
Because I'll be more than happy to if you don't tell me everything. Where you've been, what you've been doing, where you got that awful vest.
Batting her paw away, he sat down on a stone.
Well, if you must know, I've been nowhere, doing nothing.
He leaned forward.
But what about you? You're really the fisher? Since that day.
She stretched out on her stomach.
Soon as you left, I went home, and Ma, she took one look at me, smiled the biggest smile I've ever seen from her, and resigned on the spot. She and Pop moved back up to Madison. Here I am, shaman of Ottersgate, living in the old sycamore and everything. I check your stump once a season, make sure the bugs haven't eaten it, but...
Her voice got quiet.
You back for good, Tiny, or just passing through? For good.
The 2 weeks limping along the meerkat road from Kazirazif had settled it in his mind.
There's a lot of stuff out there, Lazy, but...
He turned, looked over the river valley to Ottersgate Island.
None of it's this. And the past?
She asked, her voice just as quiet. A shiver in his fur, and he looked back at her.
Is gone,
he said.
And good damn riddance to it.
He swallowed.
But we didn't change anything here. Did we?
She shook her head.
For better or worse, it all still happened the same way.
Rat blew out a breath. He'd figured that bringing Overton back wouldn't have affected Ottersgate in any way, but he'd had a pinch of hope that maybe something might have gotten moved around so Grandpa or Uncle Bors wouldn't be... Her paw poked him lightly.
You're just in time for the autumn festival, you know.
She cocked an ear, and Rat heard calliope music drifting up from somewhere, a shot of pure sunlight there in the darkness. It took him a moment to find his voice.
Well, shouldn't you be there? The shaman can't miss the opening ceremonies. I'm on my way.
She stroked her whiskers.
But a mutual friend told me you might be stopping by here tonight. What?
Rat stared at her.
Who? Silvery, glowing, usually more annoying than helpful.
She stood and stretched.
Ring any bells?
The Lord Kitfox had been keeping an eye on him? Rat swallowed, tried to think of something to say. But Blaze, a fisher, now, he reminded himself, Fisher was heading for the trees.
You've got to see this new calliope, Rat, and I'll let folks know you're back, too, so you... No!
The vehemence in his voice surprised him. He cleared his throat, looked away when Fisher swung her head back to stare at him.
I want to keep a low profile for a while. Just ease back into things, okay?
Silence for a moment, then...
Okay.
A rustle of bushes, and she was gone. A few breaths loosened his stomach, and he started into the woods after her. He should really stop off at the stump first, clean up, make himself more presentable before... Presentable? Why? He was just going to take a quick peek at the opening ceremonies, maybe from up in that big oak tree at the edge of Ree's Meadow. Let his whiskers start sorting through what was going on around here these days. Yeah. Glad to have a plan, Rat cut south and west, the trees so familiar he felt he could find his way with his eyes and ears closed. But the calliope music got louder, flowing and perfect for an autumn evening, the scents of fried food and torch oil trickling through the forest ahead. He could smell the crowd, too, and several scents, Ms. Hombacha, Mr. Spinner, Officer Hawk, Aunt Milene, made him slow, almost turn around, almost decide to head back to the stump. But just a quick look, that was all, just to see. He reached the roots of the big oak then, smiled to remember all the times he'd ambushed Blaze, Fisher, he meant, in this tree. Stretching his claws, he scurried up past the rest of the forest canopy, climbed out onto one of the oak's branches, the festival grounds spread out below him. Torches and lanterns lit the gypsy caravan, folks streaming among the curved rows of wagons toward the shrine at this end of the clearing. The new calliope was parked there, too, all shining brass and precious stones, gray and burgundy flags waving in the evening breeze, and Rat grinned to see Alphonse, tall and thin in his black vest, at the console.
The squirrel was just finishing up the piece Rat had been hearing all through the woods, his claws flashing over the metal keys, cadenzas of steam puffing from the massive fan of pipes, the traditional bronze frieze of the High Ones embossed there. Except, Rat looked closer. Sure, the frieze showed the swirls and shapes Rat knew from Nona's sand paintings, but the golden cascade that symbolized Joybringer now definitely curved into the strong shoulder and head of the Lady Lioness. He could make out the bands of an armadillo's back in the browns of Earthmover's patterns, the dark sheen of a raven's feathers in Night's Eye's blacks and silvers, the unmistakable tilt of the Lord Kitfox's head peeking out where Light Sleeper's colors showed. And over them all, Shadowbane's fiery reds arced into what had to be a squirrel's tail. The Curials and the High Ones, all the same. Rat nodded. Too bad they hadn't had that when he was a kit. The last chord blossomed out of the pipes, and Alphonse sprung from his seat, his paws raised, his voice rattling out a string of high shurid that Rat couldn't begin to catch. All the squirrels assembled in front of the shrine chanted something back, then gave a whoop that echoed through the woods. Silence followed, just the crackling of the torches and the fluttering of the flags. Then Alphonse bowed.
"Welcome, we bid to all,"
he said in Manx, his gold tooth flashing in the firelight.
"This autumn festival, a most special one, will be, in large part thanks to you Ottersgate folks, to your shaman, to the lizard elders at the Kiva."
He clicked his claws together.
"So I would please like to invite up to join me Fisher of Ottersgate and Skink of Donalis Kiva."
Rat leaned forward in his perch, saw movement in the crowd, Fisher taking the stage, Skink, a thin streak of gray standing between her ears, his head snapping back and forth to acknowledge the applause of the mice, the whoops of the otters and squirrels, the dry shuffling of the various reptiles and amphibians rubbing their scales and claws together. Fisher settled down beside Alphonse.
"Thanks, folks,"
she said, the crowd quieting.
"Our differences are easy to spot, but we all honor the same supernatural forces, whether we lay eggs or not, whether we've got fur or not, whether we swim or fly or burrow beneath the earth. One of the smartest guys I ever met didn't know we shared this heritage, and he wasn't the only one. So I began looking around for a way to remind folks."
She turned to Alphonse.
"I knew King Hector had commissioned a calliope to honor his new priest and calliope master, so I brought my idea to Karakchik."
"Indeed," Alphonse bowed to her. "A revelation, the thought was to me, and so the design process began. 3 long years artisans labored to bring our shared vision to bronze and steel and stone, and now I am very much pleased to open this festival with this calliope, this tribute to our High Ones, to our Curials, to those above who watch over us all, and most especially at this time, to the patron of this season."
He raised a paw.
"To the Lord Leopard."
Fisher raised her paw and rustled out some words in Cobraic. Then Skink raised a claw and clicked the Shurid name for soft silence.
"And so,"
the lizard called, his reedy voice carrying,
"let the festival begin."
Everyone cheered, and Rat smiled, glad he'd decided to...
"Hey,"
a slurred voice behind him.
"Get out of my spot, rodent."
Rat spun. He'd been so focused on the ceremony, he only now noticed the scritch of claws, the rustle of fur, the unmistakable stink of catnip drifting over his whiskers from... Bobcat squatted at the base of the branch, his pupils big and black.
"Wait a minute,"
he said.
"Don't I know you?"
Yeah.
Rat forced a grin.
"I'm your best friend in the world, remember? How you been, Bobcat?"
"Wait a minute."
The cat's eyes narrowed.
"You're that rat tried to kick me out of my tree stump when I moved in."
"What?"
Rat couldn't stop a laugh from popping out. Bobcat's ears folded flat.
"You laughing at me?"
he growled, slinking forward along the branch.
"Yeah."
Rat took a step back, the branch creaking and bending.
"That might not be the best idea."
Nothing but another growl and step from the cat, and Rat considered. He could try jumping to another tree. In the dark, with the wind just fluky enough to muck up his figuring and send him plummeting to the forest floor. Or he could go forward. Digging his claws into the bark, he focused on Bobcat's eyes, the cat muttering,
"I'll mess you up, same as last time."
Rat waited for him to take one more step, then he leaped for those tufted ears. Grabbing two pawfuls of fur, he heaved himself over. The cat frozen beneath him, rolled along Bobcat's back to the stub of his tail, jumped for the branch again, and was scrambling down the trunk of the tree before Bobcat could do more than say, "Hey!" Then claws above him, shreds of bark raining down, Bobcat shouting, "Come back here, you little!" But Rat was already at the tree's roots, was sprinting across the forest floor. After a whole day traveling on a sore leg, he was in no shape to play hide-and-seek in the woods. So something simple. Down to the river and in. Through the underbrush, Rat kept to the spikiest growth he could find. Thistles and nettles and blackberry brambles. But the crashing and yowls told him Bobcat wasn't getting discouraged. So Rat kept scrabbling forward. Between two last bushes, he popped out of the cover at last. Nothing between him and the water but the Otter's Gate pavilions for the autumn festival. Rat swore under his breath. He'd forgotten that they set up along the whole riverbank, tents and carts and booths, the barge the otters used for their beer garden just past them. He spun, couldn't lead Bobcat out into, but with one last roar, the cat leaped onto the grass of the open meadow, burrs covering his fur. No choice. "Mad Bobcat!" he shouted, sprinting through the first row of tents and around a little troop of mice with mandolins and accordions, their music clattering to a halt. "What?" someone asked then. "It's that Bobcat! Run!" Across to the next row of tents, Rat scrambled, heard the cat's claws still digging at the turf behind him. "Look out!" he shouted again, came out into the open, and saw the Mouse Lodge pavilion right in front of him. Corin Spinner just coming out, Paul Chowder in front of her, and already outside, torchlight flickering from her glasses, her yellow shawl around her shoulders. Kylie, more beautiful than he'd... The swish of claws made him jump, a painful clip at the end of his tail. "Get back inside!" he yelled, taking off for the river again. "Get out of the way!" "Rat?" he heard Kylie whisper. Then he was past, through the last row of booths and sprinting for the barge. Otters, foxes, crows, raccoons, laughing and singing and holding mugs. Dodging under a vixen's tail, Rat rolled into the darkness under the lip of the barge's deck. Low in the mud, he looked back, intent on the last row of tents. 2 seconds later, Bobcat came barreling out, his eyes going wide. He tried to stop, but his paws tangled, tripped him, sent him sliding down the bank, right into a group of otters, stepping off the gangplank from the barge's deck. "Avast!" someone yelled, and the otters scattered, Bobcat spinning to a stop with a big otter wrapped around his middle. "Are you all right, sir?" a familiar voice asked, and Rat saw Trex and Patklin among the otters getting to their paws.
"Oh, quite so, bosun."
The big otter sprang up from Bobcat with a laugh.
"Takes more of a broadside than that to breach a Godolkin."
He squinted down at the cat.
"I say, Trek, you reckon this might be that Bobcat we've been hearing complaints about from our rabbit neighbors?"
Trek shrugged.
"Only heard of one hereabouts, sir."
The big otter nodded and snapped his claws.
"Two beers, then, bosun, if you please, and as quickly as possible."
"Aye, sir."
Trek scurried up the gangplank and out of sight, the larger otter poking Bobcat hard in the ribs.
"Ow!"
The cat gulped, flailed, spun and twisted till he was more or less upright.
"Steady on, steady on,"
the large otter said with a grin.
"A bit of a collision is all. None the worse for it, are you?"
"That rat."
Bobcat sat, shook his head.
"Wasn't rat? No, 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 I'm an otter."
He stuck out a paw.
"Lorne Godolkin, Mayor of Ottersgate, a pleasure running into you."
Yeah.
Bobcat took the paw and shook it.
"Now, when my mum was mayor, she used to say, oh, well, here's our stalwart bosun."
The gangplank thumped above him, and Rat saw Trek come sliding down, two mugs of beer clenched in his front paws.
"Care to come topside for a drink, Bobby?"
Before the cat could say anything, the large otter had taken both mugs from Trek, shoved one into Bobcat's paw, and was clapping the cat around the shoulders, leading him up and out of sight.
"You know, I'd heard there was a Bobcat in the Otter's Gate area, and had been wanting to have a bit of a word with you, but fancy coming across you here and now. Now, when my mum was mayor, she used to go on and on about..."
His voice faded into the hubbub of the beer garden, and Rat crawled out from under the barge, mud clinging cold and wet to him. Maybe he could still get out of here before... Come on! A quiet voice, a paw grabbing his, Kylie suddenly there and pulling him toward the stern of the barge. Too numb to resist, he followed her around, sounds and scents coming now from the other side. Paul Chowder and Corin Spinner and several others he vaguely recalled from school, all saying, "It was heading this way!
I don't hear it anymore!
Did someone go for Sergeant Hawk?"
"Oh, I knew it was you!"
Kylie whispered ahead of him. He focused on her, standing ankle-deep in the river behind the barge.
"But I doubt the others noticed the way that bobcat came crashing through."
He could only blink at her grin.
"Still, you didn't look like you were ready for a full-fledged reunion right then."
His brain as mushy as snow in April. He shook his head.
"Look, Kylie, I didn't...
"Shh!" She patted his snout.
"I'm so glad you're home, Rat."
Then with a shout, she threw herself into the river and started thrashing, the current rushing her past the barge.
"What's that?"
came Corin's voice.
"Did you hear... Hello?"
he heard Kylie call from downstream.
"Could someone please give me a paw here?"
"Kylie?"
Paul, this time.
"Where?" "There!"
Corin again.
"What did you do, fall in?" "Yes, careful, the mud's slippery."
With all the splashing and chatter, Rat slid into the water and let the flow carry him past the group of mice helping Kylie out, her shawl and fur absolutely dripping.
"No harm done,"
he heard her say, and he looked back, met her eyes, saw her smile.
"Did me a lot of good, actually."
The other mice all laughed, and the river swept Rat around the bend into Ottersgate's West Channel. Darkling Eclectica Presents has brought you Part 14 of Rat's Reputation by Michael H. Payne. Music and narration were by Michael Payne. Darkling Eclectica Presents is a production of KUCI in Irvine. Thank you.